Now we will have our second presentation, and that will be done by Ashraf Bolli, please. He is a lecturer at the University of Western Cape. He's a lecturer at the Department of Public Law and Jurisprudence. And he will be talking, his paper will be, his presentation will be on divorce at the request of the wife in Islam. Does she have to prove fault? Yes and no.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Or by judicial decree of separation at the request of the husband or the wife. This gives us an indication that divorce is solely not in the hands of the husband, as what we are led to believe. Common practice, yes, common practice has told us that in most instances it is the husband that does proceed with repudiation procedures. However, that is not the norm. The woman's right to divorce that is found within Islam. In Islam, the wife has the right to institute divorce proceedings. The concept of the wife instituting divorce proceedings is not foreign to Islam. The first is through what they refer to as a delegated talaq or a delegated repudiation, right? Which I will give you as an example, and I say that it must be contained in the original marital contract. Bearing in mind as well that within Islam, marriage is viewed as a contract, it's contractual in nature. For example, using the delegated repudiation, if both parties are in agreement as part of the marriage contract, the wife may be given the right to unilaterally divorce her husband, similar to the right which the husband has to divorce his wife. Secondly, it is by way of judicial intervention, also referred to as a divorce by way of tafriq, which is a divorce for cause. This type of divorce is usually granted by a religious judge, referred to as a qadi, usually granted in the instances of abuse or abandonment. It seems that the question of fault has to be present. With this particular divorce, the wife has to prove that she has been harmed. She may be harmed in any way, where she's been abused or the husband has not carried out his duties. The next is what they refer to as a fasakh divorce, which falls under the banner of a judicial divorce. This type of divorce usually involves the judge. It's also used to indicate the formal rescission of the marriage. The wife is allowed this type of divorce on the grounds that she has to prove injury or discord, failure to maintain, defect on the husband, and lastly, either absence or imprisonment of the husband. Now, dealing with marriage and divorce, there is one concept that is central to both the institutions, if I may use that word, and that is the dowry. My colleague has spoken about it previously in his delivering of his paper. And within Islam, this is a central issue. It features prominently within marriage, and it features prominently within divorce as well. Okay? It goes by many names, and it's also referred to as a nuptial gift to the wife. However, I must state this, that it is not a bridal price for the wife. He is not buying the bride. He is giving her a gift in acceptance of an offer to marry him. Okay? This dowry that I'm referring to does not terminate on death or divorce. It becomes a debt which is payable from the estate of the husband to the wife. And also the question of how much dowry must be paid. There is no consensus on what the amount is. It can be as high as whatever it is. However, it may not be nothing. It may not be low. So in other words, what the dowry should be is that what the man can afford to pay the prospective wife within reason. If you are extremely wealthy, your dowry will be quite high. If you are a normal working person, your dowry will be in the lower limits. What is acceptable, what you can afford. What does the dowry do as well? It is given to the wife. It places her on an economic footing coming into the marriage. She has assets already. Dowry can be anything. It can be money, it can be property, it can be clothes, gifts, whatever the case may be. But it has to be something of value. Okay? The dowry can either be prompt or it can be deferred. It can be prompt in the sense that once the marital contract has been concluded, the husband can pay the dowry, or it can be deferred to a later date. where the husband will say, I will give you X amount now, but as we proceed with our marriage and I become a richer person, I will pay you X amount. Okay? Now, the deferred dowry is not just, I will pay you some amount in the future. No, it means that there has to be a date upon which that amount becomes payable. Not sometimes in the future, as I've indicated there. The consequence of not paying the dowry may result in the following. The wife or the prospective wife may delay the marriage. She may delay the marriage. Or if they are married and the deferred dowry is not being paid, she can refuse the husband, also referred to as the lonely head. This is the topic I'm going to spend most of my time. It is referred to as a cool divorce. Right? And this type of divorce is at the request of the wife. It is found in a primary text of Islam, that is the narrations of Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be on him. A cool divorce basically means the following, that in order to get my divorce or my freedom, I am prepared to give you everything that you have given me. So my dawah, which has been prompt, which you have given me, I'm prepared to return to you. I'm also prepared my deferred dawah, which has been stated in the matter of contract, to forego. So in a nutshell, it is the wife that will forego all entitlements to what she is to be received. Okay. The wife does not have to give more than what she has received. Right? However, she may not give anything back at all. The wife could arrange an amicable settlement. For example, where there are young children, she could provide nursing for the child during the 2-year period of suckling. If she does not, the husband will have to get something, have to pay that person. Or keeping and maintaining the child at her expense for a fixed period of time. Once again, should the husband take the children, he would have to get somebody to look after them and pay her, the particular person, an amount of money. What is the advantage to the husband by allowing the wife to get a cool divorce? The advantage to the husband is that the prompt and the deferred dawah is terminated with immediate effect. It is terminated. The issue of whether the husband has to agree has not been decided. There are those scholars that argue that the husband has to agree, and there are those that say, no, he does not have to agree. I'm going to just read you a narration. A woman had once approached the Prophet, peace and blessings be upon him, and said that she had hated her husband. The Prophet's response was, are you prepared to give back the orchid that he has given you as your dowry? The woman replied, in fact, I'm prepared to give more than that. The Prophet's response was, no, you do not. You only have to give back what you have received. Okay. So, based on this particular text, and the primary text being the narrations of the Prophet, peace and blessings be upon him, I am led to believe that the consent of a husband is not required. Okay. Scholars such as Doi and Nafti cite a prophetic narration, which I just discussed with you now, which they have interpreted as being that the husband's consent on this type of divorce, a cool divorce, is not required. In a leading judgment handed down by the Supreme Court of Pakistan, dating back to 1967 in the matter of Khurshid Bibi versus Muhammad Amin, the court noted the following. It said, in Islam, marriage is a contract and not a sacrament, and whatever sanctity attaches to it remains basically a contractual relationship between the parties. Islam recognizes the weakness in human nature, has permitted the dissolution of the marriage, and does not make it an unseparable tie, condemning the spouses to a life of helpless despair. The Quranic legislation makes it clear that it has raised the status of women. The Holy Quran declares in verse 2-228 that women have rights against men similar to those that men have against them. In fact, it says, it conferred the right of khula on women as against the right of talaq to men. So the argument at the end of the day that men have the unilateral right to divorce their wives for any reason, willy-nilly, based on this text that's found in the primary source, we can argue that the wife too possesses that right. And contrary to what our beliefs were in the beginning, that yes, Islam does not allow the woman to divorce. Unfortunately, I agree with that statement. If you look at certain Islamic countries, the woman does have a problem obtaining a divorce. There are usually lengthy delays in getting a particular divorce. Okay. The disadvantage is that women are dependent on the dawah that is given to them. However, women situated in certain classes may opt for such a divorce. We find that women coming from wealthier families that do not need the dawah that has been given to them can forego that. If they do not love the husband, or for whatever reason, whether the husband is abusive or not. Who does place a woman on an unequal footing in the marriage or not? It does place the woman to a certain extent, yes, on an unequal footing. But if we really analyze it at the end of the day, and we make the argument that the husband has the right to unilaterally divorce his wife, there are payments that he has to incur. He has to pay the dawah, the deferred dawah to which they agreed upon. So it becomes financially difficult for him. Where the woman opts for this particular divorce, a full divorce, she loses her entitlements. Right? It also, we will find that many will not opt for this type of divorce, that they are very dependent on actually receiving or holding on to that dawah that has been given to them from the inception of the marriage. However, just going a little bit further than that, is that the dawah is central to marriage and divorce in Islam. It is a bargaining tool, yes it is, a bargaining tool for both parties to the marriage. The husband can use it, so can the wife. I'm finishing off. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I hope I'm still within my time. It was before I get a note from the...
That's been
10 minutes
of presentation. Excellent.
Thank you for the giving us. Right. Now, I've seen hands and legs,
but... And heads. Legs.
Mohammed.
No, thanks. Thank you very much. Somehow I think perhaps your discussion also needs to weave into the notion that you know talks about these, the whole issue of halal and all of these other dimensions. There's also a array of school of interpretation that comes in, and particularly when you start now making reference to the husband being divorced, your wife sort of saying that thrice within one go, then that becomes sort of acceptable. But again, because of the various schools, there are various dimensions of that. So this brings to the issue of interpretation. Because after all, whether it is the Shafi school, the Hanafi school, Maliki school, or Zaydi or Imami, whatever, all of these schools have their different opinions based upon historical context, based upon sociological issues, and this brings me to the third sort of aspect, and that is culture. Like you rightly mentioned, yes, when you look at some of these Muslim countries as such, whether you go to Pakistan or Afghanistan, culture plays such a critical important role and decisive role in terms of determining the status of that moon. Whether she wants to wear khul or not, that khul becomes almost a non-entity in those circumstances, partly because a cultural practice, and this relates to what Ms. Fidel is talking about, this project of the Canadians who are trying to raise the limits of marriage, so to speak, from, you know, being young. And in some of these communities, unfortunately, sadly, these cultural practices seem to have become so entrenched and so embedded that when it comes to the issue of divorce and so forth, unfortunately, these women are voiceless. And just lastly, just in terms of, I just want to get from you, to what extent is school, as a sort of nucleus of institution, being practiced, for example, in the Cape or in South Africa or amongst minority Muslim communities, do they take advantage of this? Because it also comes to the point which you made, finally, that you make, is that in the marital agreement, unfortunately, sometimes marital agreements are not even encouraged by the people who institute the marriage. Now that when Mr. X gets married, they don't even tell the man, did you make an agreement with your future spouse as to how you're going to sort of live your life or whatever, with the mom, with the dowry and stuff? So, yeah, thank you.
Well, thank you for your comments. I do agree with you that the four schools of, well, the four dominant schools of thought, I should rather say, do have various opinions on what happens. But I think the cool divorce amongst those four schools, it is agreed upon that this is a divorce that can take place. In Far East Egypt in 2000, they have now legislated a cool divorce within that particular framework. Within a framework, local framework like South Africa, I must admit that women are not aware of this particular practice. In fact, we can also say that it is also the clergy that has not made women aware that there is a procedure, right, that can, you can go on that particular route and get a divorce. However, the centrality of the dawah plays an important part, because that is the first issue we have to look at. And we have to look at it and we have to say that women, you cannot enter in a marriage for anything less than X amount of money or value of something. Women are getting married without knowing or accepting a suitable dowry. And once that dowry is there, it places women on an almost equal footing when it comes to divorce, because there are concerns amongst everybody. Yes, that when I get married, my husband may divorce me because, you know, he's got this unilateral right to divorce me. Yes, he has. So, to the women, you have that right. So the centrality is the dawah. That once the husband, and they agree to the contract, coming again to the contract, just to speak about that, yes, the contract is not evident in our society. However, it should be there. It is part and parcel of Islam. It has come from the beginning, and we are not implementing it. Those persons that are aware that, hold on a second, I do know something about marriage or divorce. Let me speak to the other part. Let me speak to my in-laws and tell them there's going to be a marital contract. My daughter wants a prompt down of X amount of money. She wants a deferred amount. Right? Giving some sort of foundation in that marriage when it starts. Then, hold on a second, if you are going to divorce me for any wedding that you have, there are consequences. And those consequences that you have to pay. And many women in South Africa are divorced for wedding that you reasons, and they are suffering. They cannot go to their families because of the stigma attached by persons. Also, what is responsible for this that we should not look at is that the patriarchal order which has come about. That men seem to assume, I know this about religion and you cannot question me. So yes, we do have we've got a long way to go. The persons that I have spoken to have looked at things and said, no, I haven't heard of that. So we do have quite a distance to go, and if she wants to finish it up, and I thank you for your comment.
Thank you. Do we have any other questions? the absence of any other person. We thank him for his presentation. And he may be leaving us any time from now because duty calls him elsewhere. So if you say he wants to get